What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Our Lives in Medicine. This episode features Dr. Laura Shaheen. Dr. Shaheen is an OB-GYN who specializes in fertility and in vitro fertilization. Her practice focuses on helping couples become families. She helps young couples, old couples, LGBT couples, and more achieve their dreams of starting or growing a family. She is an author, a speaker, and a TikTok genius. Check out this highly informative episode and learn about this amazing physician's journey to become a fertility specialist. I hope you enjoy. And if you do, please feel free to share the episode with others. Please like us and rate us on iTunes. It really helps more than you can imagine. And as always, if you need some good beats to study to or get some work done or just catch some good vibes, check out the intro and outro for the lo-fi beats and check the show notes for the artist shoutouts. I hope you enjoy and I hope you have a fantastic day. So I get to know you a little bit, so I apologize if I ask like silly questions on this one, but you're my first time I've ever done just one cold, but I think it'll be really fun.
Oh, well, we will have a lot of fun, and there is no such thing as a silly question, so you should just go right ahead.
You say that now, but you haven't done the interview, so we'll see.
I can handle it.
All right, sweet. So first thing is, we are live with Dr. Shaheen. Did I get it right?
Yes, thank you.
Perfect. Look at that. Off to a great start. So, yeah, we're live with Dr. Shaheen. You're an OB-GYN, correct?
Yes. Residency in obstetrics and gynecology, and then a fellowship in reproductive endocrinology and infertility. Wow, I'll try and say that fast 3 times.
Yeah, seriously. So, hold on. I usually have this written down, but I'm going to take notes real quick. So, RE, which is the fertility, you said?
Right. So, it's REI. Reproductive endocrinology and infertility.
Okay.
Is the sweet. Fellowship.
All right, sweet. So let's hit OB-GYN first. What made you kind of go down that road in the first place?
Well, I'll tell you what, I was a huge nerd in medical school and I loved almost every type of medicine that I was introduced to. I just really liked being with patients. I liked surgery. I liked psychiatry. I liked all these different things. And it was OBGYN was actually my very last rotation in medical school. Mm-hmm. And it was just like a light bulb went off. I was like, oh my gosh, this combines all of my interests in, you know, surgery, women's health, some clinic and office practice. Everything was combined. And it was like a light bulb went off.
that's awesome. Yeah. So what was like the first thing that kind of hinted to you that, wow, this is definitely what I want for a career?
Well, I knew, you know, that when you're going through medical school and people are talking about, oh, what residency you're going to choose, really the first thing people tell you to choose is whether it should be a surgical or non-surgical specialty. So I knew that I kept being drawn to surgical specialties, and I liked procedures. I liked doing things with my hand. I liked being in the operating room. And then I just really enjoyed helping women and women's health and talking to women about their issues. And I really felt like it was a good long-term fit for me.
Yeah, interesting. And you kind of grew that into the infertility kind of practice as well, it sounds like, right?
Yeah, so again, I didn't really go into my residency knowing that I wanted to do a fellowship. I really chose OBGYN feeling that that was what I was going to do, that I was going to deliver babies for the rest of my life and be a primary obstetrician gynecologist. But as I went through my training, I kept getting exposed to different fields in obstetrics and gynecology, and I was just fascinated with fertility. I loved learning all about IVF and really thinking about how I could honestly help people at this really vulnerable time in their life. It's really frustrating to not be able to have your family when you're ready to have your family, and I just really like the idea of being able to help people at that point.
Yeah, that's absolutely a beautiful feeling, I can imagine. The only experience I have with IVF is I've seen the really awesome videos of, suctioning the egg and plating it and kind of watching it grow. But and like from undergrad, not even in med school, but I'm sure there's so much more to it.
Well, that's another thing that I love about the field is it's constantly changing. The technology is incredible, and I knew that I would never stop learning. I mean, I think that's true for any type of medicine because things are just moving so fast, but I just felt it especially strong in IVF and all the technology that's around that field.
What are some of the new technologies that have come out since maybe you finished your fellowship?
Think one of the biggest things that's drastically changed is our success rates have increased dramatically, even since I've been in the field for over 10 years. And that is so satisfying. I mean, it's amazing to be able to talk to a patient about IVF and say, hey, if we can find a genetically screened embryo and transfer that embryo, you can have as high as a 65, 70% live birth rate. And that's transferring one embryo. We don't even have to risk twins anymore and have this extremely high success rate. And when I first started out, we were talking about success rates in the, 30% range. So it's actually doubled in my own career, and I have only been practicing for, well, it's been a long time. But I mean, still, to see something that dramatic in your own career, and I still have a long way to go, is really satisfying.
Yeah, I bet that's awesome. So, kind of another follow-up with that is it's reproductive endocrine infertility. So, is it kind of looking at maybe endocrine causes of infertility and then also maybe not, I hate to say structural, but there's some issues with egg production, there's some issues with the uterus itself. Is it kind of a combination of both?
Absolutely. So the 3-year fellowship, we learn a lot about female endocrinology and a lot of hormonal conditions, thinking about polycystic ovarian syndrome, endometriosis, premature ovarian failure, some pituitary issues. And a lot of people don't realize that recurrent first trimester miscarriage is actually a specialty in our field. People often will refer to OBGYNs or high-risk obstetricians for recurrent pregnancy loss, but it's actually my subspecialty that focuses on that. So the field is very IVF and fertility heavy now, but traditionally it was much more hormonal driven and even more surgical than it is today.
When you say more surgical, is that kind of the direct implant? I'm confused. What would be the difference now, kind of? Is it more of the implanting, or what is more surgical about it now?
Sure. So a lot of reproductive endocrinologists really focused on their surgical training and skills over the last few decades, because honestly, that was one of the best treatment options for patients with fertility, treating endometriosis surgically, trying to do a diagnostic laparoscopy to figure out why people aren't conceiving. But as IVF has increased its success rate, the use of surgery in the field has honestly gone down dramatically. It's like an inverse curve. And so most fertility specialists graduating now don't have a real focus of surgery in their practice. Most reproductive endocrinologists are focusing on IVF, and a lot of the gynecology surgery is done by either primary gynecologists or people who've done fellowships in pelvic surgery, or even gynecology oncologists that spend a ton of time learning really advanced surgical techniques.
Okay. So it's definitely, that's a pretty cool evolution over time of an already really fascinating field. That sounds really cool, and you've gotten to see it firsthand.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
So what is the route to becoming, like, to getting to an REI fellowship?
Sure. You got to go to medical school, of course, and then you do a 4-year residency in obstetrics and gynecology. And in that residency program, you apply for a fellowship. And there's less than 40 spots in the United States. It is a really small field. A lot of people are not aware of that.
No, that's tiny.
Mm-hmm.
40 spots. I mean, some programs for other fields have that many in a single residency class, you know?
Right,
That's crazy.
exactly. Yeah, REI fellowship is a very small, small number of spots, and unfortunately, it's pretty competitive.
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, I guess, right? But,
Oh, yeah.
yeah, so
Yes,
that's.
very true. I do know people that really wanted to do it, and it took a couple of years of trying, maybe,
That's
or
true.
shifting focus. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, it's kind of like, so I just recently interviewed an oral maxillofacial surgeon, and I feel like IVF or REI, excuse me, and OMFS kind of the same thing. It's like you got to be dedicated because that's a really serious field, and not to say anything else isn't, but I get the heated process for it. It makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
So, what are the interviews like when you're interviewing for that fellowship?
Oh, sure. Well, of course they differ, each program that you go to. And now in the setting of a pandemic, I feel like there's not going to be in-person interviews. I've already heard some talk about that, but traditionally, it's visiting each program, and meeting with multiple faculty members, meeting with the current fellows that are in the program to learn about their day-to-day, and then meeting, of course, with the heads of the department. It's a great way to get to know different academic programs. It's a great way to meet people in the field. Like, it really is such a small field. Once you realize how few fellows are trained each year, that interview trail, I've met people that have become lifelong colleagues just from those interviews. It was really fun.
You know, it's funny. I met one guy in particular on my med school interview that we still talk to this day. We didn't end up getting in at the same places, but
Oh.
actually, where I ended up going, he didn't end up going, but we still talk to this day. And like, we were like, congratulations on match day. And where are you going, man? It's awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah, we met one day and we hit it off perfectly. We play video games together. It's pretty funny.
That is great. That's exactly what I'm talking about. You're
yeah.
meeting people that have obviously very similar interests to you, and you find out you have a lot in common.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then, you go to med school and then some of the people there that should also maybe have in common, you don't even like interact with because you don't have anything in common, but some random person you met on one little sitting, you stay lifelong friends with. So that's pretty cool.
Exactly. It is really cool.
And you were saying the interviews this year might be, or most likely will be virtual. Isn't it kind of crazy how important that is? Because if all these medical students are traveling or, resident applicants for fellowships are traveling around the country. Isn't it kind of crazy to think that healthcare people or medical students, things like that, would be partially responsible for continuing the spread of COVID? Wouldn't that be kind of crazy?
Exactly. I mean, it's just something that you, I mean, every time something new changes in life, whether it's personally or professionally, because of this pandemic, you're kind of like, oh my gosh, like, I didn't even think that this was possible. I didn't even think we were going to have to think through this. Like, you're right. It's just crazy.
Yeah. So I guess it's for the best though. It's just it really is unfortunate because you might miss one of those applicants might miss out on a future lifelong friend they could have had, but also just the being there on campus, getting the vibe of everything that's there, seeing the buildings that you're going to spend countless hours in is really important. And unfortunately, they're not going to get that. I hate that for all the applicants, but
I
I
know.
guess it's for the best, but it's
I
unfortunate.
know. I absolutely agree. There is nothing like being in a place when you're trying to find a school or a job or a fit. There is nothing like just the feel of the place or the way people are interacting with each other. I absolutely agree. It's a big loss. They're gonna try to do some virtual videos and things like that for the applicants, and each program is really gonna try to make it as personal as possible, but it is just not going to be the same.
You know, I respect that, and it shows the effort that programs and universities and things will take. But at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, when you go apartment shopping or house shopping, you can get tricked real easily by a video. You're like, oh, that place is perfect. And then you show up, and it's like not what you thought. So,
Exactly.
I've had that happen a few times. Luckily, I went and saw it and didn't get trapped, but it's scary to be like, wow, I could have just pulled the trigger and bought that place or rented that place, and then that would have been a nightmare. So
Absolutely.
it's super important, but you know, I think things work out, and if you get somewhere and it's tough, it's just a couple years and you can manage, so who knows.
Yeah, I really do talk to people who are asking me about career advice, and it's so nerve-wracking. The path to medicine is really nice because it's very much laid out for you, and you only have to make little chunks of decisions, you know, like, okay, where am I going to spend my 4 years of medical school? Where am I going to spend my 4 years or 3 years of residency, et cetera? But yet, you also feel like you're making this huge lifelong decision, like, what residency am I going to do? What fellowship am I going to do? Where am I going to start practicing? And one thing that just really always made me feel better is just like, you know what? I'm going to make the best decision with the information that I have that's in front of me, but I can always change my mind. You know, and just like knowing that just helped me be able to make those tough decisions. And I never changed residencies, I never changed fellowships. You know, I kind of stayed on that path, but just like releasing the pressure valve a little bit by kind of saying that to myself just made those tough decisions a little bit easier.
That's true. Stay the course and get what you can out of it, because even on rotations, or you know, let's say rotations, for example, that you may not necessarily need in the future, you can still learn valuable lessons from it. So there's always something to take from it, as much of a grind and pain as it may be, but you can always try to learn to at least find something positive out of it. So totally agree. And so when you're in IVF training. I know I'm kind of focusing mostly on the REI, but I just don't know anything about it. So it's so cool to me. So what is that 3-year training kind of like? What are some of the rotations that you do?
Sure. Typically, it's every program is a little bit different, but there's going to be a little bit of research and a little bit of clinical. And, you know, some of the fellowships will still have a little bit of maybe OBGYN call, you know, like delivering babies or covering the ER for gynecology emergencies. But a lot of it is just being with your mentors in clinic. I did my fellowship at Stanford, and one of the things that I loved about it was I had my own patients, and so that was so fulfilling. So my first year, I had my own clinic, and I, you know, met my own patients and carried them through till they were successful, and always had my own clinic each week. I loved that. And then research, it's a lot of times it's really basic science focused. That's very traditional, like being in a lab and learning about hormones or doing animal experiments or cell experiments. But I just never really was drawn to lab research. I did it through college and I did it through medical school because I knew it was important to have that experience, but it just never was super thrilling for me. So when it was time for me to choose my thesis, which is a project that ends up, you know, taking about a year, I actually chose a clinical study, and I ended up doing a randomized controlled trial with patients that were going through IVF. And I just loved it so much because it helped me still be in the clinic and see my own patients and learn more about caring for patients, not being kind of stuck, that's my word for it, stuck in like a lab, doing basic science research. So I'm really fortunate that I was able to find a thesis that I could do that still kept me in the clinic with patients because that's what I love. I knew I didn't want to do basic science research.
Yeah, that would kind of be unpleasant if your, you know, your passion is being with patients directly, and then you're sitting there pipetting and
Exactly.
running the PCR and, you know, doing things like that. So yeah, that's good. That's lucky and awesome. But I feel like if you had got quote unquote stuck at the bench, you would have made the best of it. But luckily you didn't have to. So that's good.
Yes. Yeah. It's just nice to know that there's options. And, I think that's important too as you're going through the path. Just because everybody else seems to do things a certain way, if it doesn't seem right for you, that doesn't mean that you have to do it too. Like, it's really important to think outside of the box in your training because you can't just keep looking ahead. You got to enjoy what you're doing and in the moment, or life is just going to pass you by.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. That's cool. So it's good to know that no matter what, I think it's good to have that attitude of no matter what you do, you can still make the best of it. So I think that's the overarching principle we've got going here. So.
Love it.
And now, what, looking at your practice now, what is kind of your current day to day? Like, what percent of IVF do you do? What percent of OB-GYN do you do?
Yeah, so I only do fertility care and miscarriage care. We help people with fertility and family building planning and strategy and IVF. And then once they conceive, we follow them through the first trimester. And then they graduate from our practice and have the rest of their obstetric care with their primary OBGYN.
Okay. Do you miss catching babies?
Yes and no. It's such a like magical experience, and I will say when it goes well, it's just like this absolutely incredible moment. What I don't miss are those rare times where things don't go well and it's sort of like a urgent situation. I don't miss that adrenaline rush, but I
Right.
do miss the fun and sort of the, I miss the long-term care of patients. I think in primary OBGYN, you could have somebody in your practice for decades, whereas in fertility, I'm really seeing people at a short, hopefully, time period in their life where they're trying to build their family. I might see them back for, baby number two or three, but I'm not seeing them for decades. It's a finite time.
Yeah, that's true. Which is quick turnover. You get to make a lot of connections that, but it's
Yeah.
you like making long-term connections. It's different. Yeah, that's true. I get that.
Yeah.
I get that. That's unfortunate for everyone else 'cause, you know, they get to come to you for a couple months and then they don't get to see you anymore. You know, you sound like you'd be
Oh.
a fun attending and preceptor
Oh,
and,
thanks.
you know, caretaker. So that'd be fun. But, you know, they get the huge gift of life, so that's cool, still cool. You still get to do a really fun thing, so even though it's a shorter time.
Yes, definitely. It's a true honor and privilege.
Yeah. Do you work with residents at all?
We do. So we work with the University of Washington OBGYN department, and the residents rotate through our practice for about 6 weeks at a time. And they see patients with us, they do procedures with us. It's a wonderful experience. They really keep me on my toes.
Yeah, I bet. We're a headache, that's for sure. Not in a negative way. It's just we definitely keep you on your toes. So if you turn your
Yeah,
back, like watching a baby, you turn your
good.
back for 1 second and all hell can break loose. So you gotta be on your toes.
No. They're always asking questions. Like, it's so easy to just kind of get stuck in your day-to-day and just kind of do things the way you've done them just because there's no reason to change. And one of the best things about being in academics and having new people come through, is they'll often be like, why do you do it this way? And then makes you sort of think like, I don't know. Do we need to keep doing it this way? And so it is really good. And they do at least one presentation when they're rotating through with us. And so they'll often take a clinical question or a way that we have been treating patients and even update us on the newest literature. And it's a really good mutual learning relationship. I'm really glad to have them.
So, what makes a good resident, in your opinion?
A good resident is someone that is authentically engaged and interested in learning. It's really easy to tell when people are just kind of showing up or asking questions just to ask questions. But if the person is really interested in learning, that is an absolute joy to have in the clinic and fun to teach.
Okay, got you. I'll try to keep that in mind because I have L&D coming up in like 2 or 3 months. And, I would love advice actually for you and just even the discussion on men in the OB-GYN field, particularly male residents.
Yeah, it's tough because there are patients that will say, I decline having a male doctor. And we, in the field respect that. It's painful though, because I mean, everybody needs to learn. And I think it's so important for it's a part of teaching and learning and passing on information is that experience. But I think for male residents and male medical students, just to really not take it personally when people decline to have you do a pelvic exam, I think it's really important to realize that it's not that they are personally have anything against you. It could be a history of abuse or something that it's not you. It's just a decision that we really, need to respect, and help you learn in any way that we can.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine it's probably one of the most compromising positions one can be in. So I definitely get the added uncomfortable component of having a male in the room. So I definitely won't take it personal. I'll
Yeah.
just try my best to learn whatever I can because L&D sounds interesting. I know at my place it's a busy service, but I'm pretty sure everywhere it's busy, but. In a few months, I have it in like 3 months or so, I think 3 or 4 months. So all the quarantine babies and quarantine checkups are going to be showing up. So I'll have my hands full, I'm sure. So it'll be
Yeah.
interesting.
Oh, it's such an interesting place, labor and delivery. Like, there's so much camaraderie among the team that works there, and there's some downtime where you can just, chat and get to know people, and then there's crazy, rush of fun deliveries, and it's just you never know what to expect, and it's a really, really unique and magical place. I think you're going to have a great experience.
Some of my classmates already who've gone through it said it's pretty fun. It's just they're like, oh, it's hard, but don't get me wrong, it's like 5:30 a.m. to 7 p.m., five, six, 7 days a week, but at least it's fun. So I'd rather do that than be like those hours in like an outpatient clinic kind of just sitting around. So I definitely won't be doing too much sitting around, I'm sure. So that's cool. I had when I was third year, I had an attending tell me two things. People never have heart attacks and never deliver babies at 2 p.m. It's always 2 a.m. It's like
That's great.
you always get pulled out of bed at 2 a.m. to go deliver a baby or deal with a heart attack. So it's
That's true. That sounds just about right.
like, yeah, like that's so rude of those little babies, you know? I want you coming when I'm awake and ready to rock and roll. No, you got to call me at 3 a.m. So
So funny.
yeah, that was a pretty wise words. And I was like, all right, well, maybe I won't do those two fields and then, so. That's funny. One of the things it'd be interesting to know for you is when you were in school, you said you liked everything. What else were you considering besides OB-GYN as a med student?
Sure. Honestly, I mean, you'll kind of laugh when you hear it. Like, I was really thinking about doing internal medicine with a women's health focus. And then I loved surgery. And so I was thinking about doing general surgery or plastics and reconstructive or urology. I actually really liked urology. And so when you hear those two things, of course you think, well, obviously OBGYN because it's surgical and women's health. Like it combines those two things. I don't know why it just like someone needed me to like knock me over the head with it. I really liked dermatology too, which I know has like no cert like it does have little procedures, but it doesn't have like a lot of OR. But I just really liked the pattern recognition of rashes and thinking about what was reflecting on the skin was going on inside the body. I thought that was really cool. I really liked emergency medicine because I like the adrenaline rush, kind of like the labor and delivery adrenaline rush of like exciting things that would happen, and the camaraderie of like kind of getting to know people. And then I liked the idea of shift work. Like I kind of like the idea of just kind of come in, like focus, you know, really take good care of people. And then when you clock out, you're done. You know, like that was really appealing to me. So, I mean, I can honestly just go on and on because I really did like a lot.
Yeah, I mean that's great. And ER is kind of like the Wild West. I've been in only a couple ERs, but I feel like I need to interview someone who's in emergency medicine to clarify this because it always seems like even on my rotation, it feels like everyone's moving around, but nothing's getting done. So it's like I'm always like shocked. It's like, even when I was on my rotation, I'd go into a room that someone said was ready for like a procedure, like a, a laceration repair. I'd go to do the laceration and there's none of the stuff's in there. I'm like, well, who told me to come? Who, why would you tell me to come in here if nothing's even there yet? Or like, I don't know. And then when you're on the floor, the notes are always from the ER. Everyone on IM always talks bad about ER. So I'm like, what? I wonder what happens down there. I need to talk
Oh,
to
that's so
someone
funny.
and get some clarification. So we'll have to worry about look at that in the future. But that's
Absolutely.
so my top three that I was c considering changed drastically from what I entered school with. I entered school thinking I was going to do trauma surgery or cardiothoracic because that's almost all that I followed in undergrad. And I was like, wow, this is
Very cool.
definitely it. This is cool for me. But then I was 26 when I started med school. So I was like, ah, I don't know about that lifestyle. And I didn't love the cutting as much as I thought I would. So I'm my top three when it came down to it were sports med, which I'm on now. I'm going to do family med, then sports med. And then second choice was medical examiner. I really, really
Oh
like
my
the medical
gosh.
examiner.
That is so cool. And that came out of left field. Like I was not expecting you to say
Right, I don't think
that.
I've met anyone who was like, "Wait, you wanted to be a medical examiner?" They're like,
That
"You're
is
too
cool.
social," but it is true. Like, I definitely love talking to people and interacting. But that was a really cool rotation and just a really cool profession. I think the going to court was interesting. I think the lifestyle was pretty cool. I mean, if I know this sounds bad, but if you're the people I followed, they worked 3 or 4 days a week, right? And if the night, let's say you work Monday. If no one died Sunday, your day on Monday, you just didn't have to go in. So that was pretty cool. That was pretty
Amazing.
interesting. But
I honestly was never exposed to that field. That is so cool that you even got to experience that.
yeah, we had to do an autopsy day, go to the morgue and do the autopsy day. And I was like, well, this is pretty cool, actually. I mean, I was one of the few people that didn't vomit. And so I thought, maybe I could make it. And then so I did a rotation and I liked it. It was really fun. And then number three for me, though, was psychiatry. I really liked psych, but I think that was kind of like I liked it, but definitely not enough to go into it. But I really thought hard about medical examiner. So
That's cool. Very, very cool.
it'd be interesting to see like our parallel universe selves doing something completely different right now,
Totally. Yes, definitely.
And we would both think they're crazy. We're like, oh, you picked the wrong field. But we're both happy, so that's good. That's good.
Yes, definitely. And I think you mentioned lifestyle a couple of times, and that was something that was really on top of my mind when I was going through medical school and even in residency and really thinking like, okay, when I choose a field, like what is my life going to be like? And I'd love for people to realize that you can make your job right for you. Like there is some autonomy. Like I have friends that are primary OBGYNs who work 2 days a week in the clinic and all one night a week. And so that is an incredible lifestyle. But when I was in training and seeing what academic obstetrician and gynecologist life was like, where they were working, 5 days in the clinic and on call every, fifth night or whatever, like that's what I thought the lifestyle of an OBGYN was going to be. And so I really encourage people to choose something in a field that they're really passionate with. And of course, you have to think about lifestyle, but no matter what you choose, you really can choose a lifestyle that's right for you. Like there's give and take. So like you could choose to be an OBGYN and by only working 2 days a week and one night of call, a week, you're going to make less money, but you're going to have a ton of time with your family, So I really do encourage people to not just look at the way certain doctors are practicing around them because it's such a, there's so many opportunities and variations out there that you can find one that works for you in the field that you love.
Yeah, it's interesting how, for example, as a medical student, you get, I only had 1 month of OB-GYN, and I actually really liked my rotation. But I didn't expect to because I just kind of, none of the things I mentioned as my kind of top three kind of coincided with OB-GYN, but I actually really liked it. And it's interesting though, because I could have had a completely different preceptor and had a nightmare of an experience and been like, wow, that feels terrible. And so it's unfortunate that if you don't get the right exposure, you'll never even know.
It's true. I mean, like I was just saying, I was never exposed to the job of a medical examiner, so it never even crossed my mind as a career path. And so it is true. Like you are going to be shaped by what you're exposed to. However, a good example, personally, I was not exposed to fertility in medical school. There was one reproductive endocrinologist at my medical school, and that person was not doing fertility care. That person was just doing hormonal treatment for things like menopause. And so I was not actually exposed to IVF or fertility treatment until I was in residency. And here, that's the path that I ended up being on. And even in residency, my exposure to the field was cut really short because the rotation was cut short for lots of different reasons. So yeah, it's pretty interesting looking back on the path and sort of saying, wow, this really was not laid out for me, but I found it anyway.
Yeah, and I think that I guess the lesson from that is no matter what your experience as a student, for example, your experience with a particular field is, there's always kind of you can pick your own life within it. Like there's plenty of surgeons who have a 2 or 3 day a week schedule, and there's plenty of family med doctors who work, 7 days a week. So you can build your own schedule based on anything you do. So that, yeah, it's just because you have one bad experience or you go somewhere like, oh, this is boring. They only work 2 or 3 days a week, or this is crazy. They work 150 hours a week. You don't have to do that. If you enjoyed it, look at it for the experience itself, not the time spent. So yeah, that's cool. Speaking of cool experiences within a field, I was looking on your page and I saw this post about like fertility options for LGBTQ. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the best parts of my job is helping people build families, and that means everybody, And when you are, a same-sex couple, you're gonna need help from a professional like me. And it's so exciting to help these people build families. And so there are so many options. So if someone is a lesbian couple, one partner could do donor sperm IUI, which is very like low tech and not very expensive. But an incredible option is something called shared maternity or reciprocal IVF, in which one female partner goes through the egg stimulation and the egg retrieval process. In the lab, the eggs are fertilized with donor sperm, and the embryo that results is transferred into the uterus of the other partner. So both partners are partaking in the family building process.
Oh, wow. So it's one egg and one carrier. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's cool because that way you're both involved. Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then for men, same-sex male couples, you know, they can choose an egg donor and then a carrier. And we help in all aspects of that process as well.
That's awesome. So they're involved as well. They can, you know, they both feel attached. Not that they wouldn't feel attached, but they're both directly involved. You know, that's awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's really pretty amazing.
Now, is that kind of more novel or is that all kind of a piece of pie for that field?
So donor sperm has been pretty common since even the 1960s and has just gotten used more and more in popularity in the decades since. Donor egg has been utilized for over 30 years. Surrogacy, or gestational carriers have been used for decades. And now people are even doing embryo donation. So when people have completed their families and they have embryos or fertilized eggs that are left over, one option is to actually donate it to another family to help them build their family. So there's just so many creative and amazing options that are open for people. And, unfortunately, the perception in society still is that adoption of a child is easy and, not expensive. And unfortunately, adoption has just gotten more and more complicated and difficult through the years. There are beautiful stories of adoption out there, of course, but many countries that used to have pretty open adoptions have closed recently, and domestic adoptions are, the numbers are just really down for lots of different reasons. And a lot of people don't qualify for adoption for so many different reasons, and it can be quite costly. And, honestly, people have more control and more options if they use reproductive services like mine. And the timeline can honestly be faster. Like, there's this assumption that there's a lot of kids out there that are ready for adoption, but it's not as easy as society makes us think it is.
Yeah, my understanding is that's one of the hardest things a couple or a person can go through is trying to adopt. I mean, it's a long process.
And yeah.
It's frustrating for those involved because it's like two random people can have it by quote unquote accident or whatever, you know, and these people who really want it are struggling to get it, but it's, I guess there's a lot of checks and balances in that field for a good reason. It's just, I think a lot of people end up going without who probably deserved it. So that's unfortunate, but I think it's, a really good checks and balance thing as well. So.
Mm-hmm. It's just good to know what all the options are and to know compassion, not judgment, because you never really know what people are going through until you walk in their shoes.
Absolutely. And so, you've been, I think I like what you said early in the beginning of the interview. You said you still have a lot of years to come in the field. So one of the questions I like to ask is, what do you kind of see for yourself down the road? What do you envision for your future as a practitioner?
Oh, that's exciting. I have really been doing a lot more advocacy lately and speaking out on social media and through my writing and my books as a way to reach more people than I can in my own personal practice. I just really want to get the message out about empowering people to be involved in their fertility care, trying to shatter the stigma around infertility and miscarriage. And I can tell each individual patient that I see every day and handhold them through the process, but just being able to do it with a larger voice on social media and through my writing has just been really, really an incredible experience over the past few years. And I could see that becoming a bigger part of my life in the future.
Yeah, for sure. It's nice to have that outlet. It's so easy nowadays with the social media to make a difference and reach a lot of people. That's awesome. And I'm glad you're using it for good, you know. So there's some people who definitely don't. So that's cool that you're using it for good.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's really interesting. It's definitely changing, but when I first really started getting on social media, like Instagram and TikTok, I definitely have colleagues that are just kind of like, "Wow, that is really not professional. You know, why are you doing that? You should be, you know, doing other things with your time." And I just really stick by the argument that, you know, I am teaching people where they are. People are on social media, and if doctors aren't there, they're going to be getting their information from someone else. And so if I'm giving authentic and evidence-based information, I feel that that is being professional, no matter where I'm doing it.
Well, you know, it sounds like those people saying, "Why are you doing that?" Those are what the kids call haters. So,
Yeah.
you know, I think it was once said that the more haters you have, the better you're doing. So, I think you're doing great.
Thanks.
Yeah. So.
I'm gonna put that on a t-shirt and wear it to remind myself.
Oh, absolutely. If you have one hater, that means you're just you're just getting by. If you have 100, you're doing it right. And if you can get more than that, that's even better. So, I think you're doing great.
Awesome. All
Yeah,
right,
you.
hashtag goals.
Hashtag hater goals, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're doing great. So that's really funny. But you know, it's crazy. We've been talking 45 minutes already about the medical side of you. I'd love to get some, just ask you some non-medical questions if you're down for that.
Ready,
All
go.
right, sweet. So what do you do for fun outside of when you have your life to yourself outside of the clinic?
Absolutely. I honestly write every single day. It's a true creative outlet for me. I'm a mom of two incredible children and a dog mom and a wife. And so spending time with my family, one of our true passions is travel. That is currently on hold due to a COVID pandemic.
Of course, of course.
But writing, travel, time with my family, really good quality time spent with a small group of friends is really important to me. And being really very active. I love hiking. I love riding my bike. I love just being outdoors. So trying to balance the emotional toll of the job that I have and the work that I do with a really good, fun life is really important.
So I like all of those, but the only one I can relate to is dog parent. I'm not married yet. I don't have kids yet, but I'm a dog dad, so that's like one of the greatest gifts so far. So I'm sure
Oh
the
my
other stuff is pretty
gosh.
awesome too, but I think dog dad is the best, so.
Oh my gosh. I had never had a dog my whole life. We just got one, a COVID puppy. He's 4 months old and it's the best. It is like the best decision we've ever made. He brings so much joy to this house. Wow.
It's
So,
great. And you've only had him for 4 months, you said?
oh yeah, I'm officially a dog person now.
Well, it's funny because you've only had him 4 months, and I'm sure your attachment is so strong, and it just gets stronger and stronger and stronger the
Oh.
more time that goes by. I've had mine for 6 years, and I just think about her all the time. It's like she's like a really good girlfriend, you know? It's like I think about her all the
Yeah.
time, way more than I do
So
my own
sweet.
girlfriend. So don't tell my girlfriend,
Oh. Okay. So cute.
I laugh all the time though because my dog was a rescue in Miami when I worked down there. So she has like, separation anxiety pretty bad. Plus her breed already has that. She's a Whippet Greyhound mix. But I love her to death, but if she were a real human, she would be the absolute worst girlfriend ever.
That's
Like,
hilarious.
she would be texting me all the time. Where are you? What are you doing? When are you coming home? What does that
Yeah.
smell like? I smell like, oh my God. Lila, leave
That's
me alone.
awesome. Whoa, what a cutie.
That's cool though. What type of dog do you have?
So it's a Havapoo, a Havanese toy poodle. We have allergies in the family, so we had to get something hypoallergenic. And this thing is just like a living, breathing stuffed animal. He's just like a little teddy bear.
I
Oh
just
my
looked it
God.
up. That is a beautiful little doggy. Oh my God.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Oh man. How do you leave the house with that thing in there?
We don't, we're in quarantine. We never leave.
Right? You're not gonna want to go back to work.
Nope. Yep. Totally set.
That's,
So.
yeah, it's so hard even now, I hate leaving and I look back, I'm closing the door and she's standing there just staring at me. I hate it, so
Yep. Yeah.
that's really funny. What are some of your favorite places to travel that you have traveled?
Oh my goodness. We living on the West Coast, Hawaii is actually pretty close to us relatively, so we try to go there about once a year. We did an incredible trip through Europe last summer. I took a sabbatical and it was absolutely incredible. Our goals are places like the Galapagos Islands, Machu Picchu. We want to go on a safari. We have big goals. We just, need the coronavirus to go away.
Yeah, for sure. Hawaii is so high on my list. It's such a beautiful country.
Yeah,
It's such a
no, yeah.
beautiful like state with it, but it's like it is kind of its own place, but it's like it's a beautiful country. But it's beautiful just like the pictures I've seen, and I've always wanted to go, and if I go, I kind of want to spend like a couple weeks, and I don't want to do like the sandals. I want to kind of live, and I think my plan is hit Hawaii and then go from there to Japan because I feel like I can break it up and
Yes.
kind of stagger the jet lag because there's a lot of places in Japan I really want to see, like Hiroshima Castle, and I want to see like the Shinto shrines and like I just want to hit Kyoto and Tokyo and all these places, but Hawaii would be a good, landing spot in between.
Absolutely. Yeah, I did a rotation on Oahu for 2 months, delivered babies on Oahu,
Whoa.
and it was an incredible experience to be there for 2 months and actually live there,
Yeah,
the
seriously.
food, the people, just the whole atmosphere is absolutely incredible. Like, it is important to kind of get off of the resorts if possible and maybe rent a house, in a neighborhood. It's just a beautiful place.
Yeah. Hawaii is awesome, but there's a place that I saw on like a random video on YouTube one time. This guy had this drone and he flew it through this place. It's called Petra Jordan, over in like the country Jordan, and it's a temple that's built into this like a mountain, and it just captivated me. And that's like so high on my list of priorities to go, because if I get to, I really want to travel the Middle East. I think it's such a fascinating place. And I mean, yeah, it has its risks, but if you do it right, and it's just one of the most incredible places on the planet, I think, with so much history and culture. So I would love to do like a Middle East
Absolutely.
tour.
Definitely.
Maybe I can figure out some sort of like medical thing to do along the way. That would be, make it worth, make it hit, both sides, hit fun and hit, philanthropy or whatever it may be. That would be awesome. So that's kind of, I'm looking for that forward to that in the future.
Yeah, I think you should interview medical students in the Middle East. I think you should take your podcast there. Done.
Yeah, that would be pretty sweet. I actually have someone on the docket in Tunisia. Tunisia, is it? Yeah, I think it's Tunisia. I can't remember now. But it's been a while because we were in communication and she actually, English is like her fourth language that she knows. And so she's like, well, let me take an English course and then I'll get back with you. So I
Oh,
talked
that's
to her
awesome.
recently and she's actually studying English so she can do the interview. So that'll be pretty cool. I'm
There
looking
you
forward to
go. Your
that one.
first one. Perfect.
Yeah, so hopefully I can get some real in-person interviews over there. That'd be pretty sweet. So, But if I go to Hawaii, I'll definitely get your input on the locations.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, here's a fun one I like to ask. What did you get in trouble for as a kid?
Oh my gosh. This is really funny. So, oh my gosh, this is a really funny story. I have shared this with my kids, so I guess I can share it now with the world. So, when I was in middle school and high school, I had my own babysitting service and was really an entrepreneur and really wanted to earn a lot. And what I did with that money was I really wanted to have my own phone line. So for kids these days, it would be like getting your own like iPhone, right? So I saved up and I had the phone company when I was 15 years old come to my house and install my own phone line in my room. And my dad did not know whether to be totally just irate with me or ridiculously impressed with me. He just like lost his mind. He didn't know what to do. So
That's really good.
yeah, thanks. Like that's the story. There you go.
I like that hustle. That's like huge hustle game right there.
Exactly.
Saved up for your own phone line.
I'm
I
like,
like
it's my
that.
money. It's my money. They're like, you're ridiculous. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what I would do. I'd be like a guy like your dad, a very equal combination of like confused and mad and proud. It's like I'm proud of you, but
Exactly. He's like all three. Yep.
yeah. And it's always, I don't know if your dad said that, but a lot of dads always say, well, when you make your own money, you can make your own rules. It's like, well, here we are,
Exactly. I was like, okay, this is what I want.
Exactly. When I was in like middle school, I was like sixth grade, I used to get my mom to drive. Whenever she would go to the store, I'd go with her and I'd buy like huge bags of candy. And I would sell the candy at school, kind of like out of my book bag, And I did that for
Smart.
months. I did that for months. I was making good money for a middle sixth grader. I was making really good money, like 15, 20 bucks a day selling like quarter candies. And so my dad, he used to always just kind of talk junk. He's like, who would pay 25 cents for a candy when they can buy, pay a dollar and get a whole bag of stuff? No one's gonna do that. That's stupid. Just kind of like, not putting me down, but he's like, that's stupid. Why would they do that? And so for, weeks, he would always say that. And then one night, as usual, he was saying it. And like an hour later, he comes back to my room. He's like, hey, let me get some of that candy. And I was like, how much you want? He's like, oh, let me get five or six. I was like, $1.50.
Awesome.
Yep, and guess what? He went and got it, and I was like, "Now you know why people do it, because you want
Oh
it,
my
you're gonna
God,
pay."
that's a good, that's a really good, that's a
He
really good
just,
one.
yeah, he loves that story because he's like, didn't give me a break at all. I probably would have if he hadn't been bashing my hustle for so long. So, he had to learn a lesson.
No family discount.
Exactly. And then a few weeks later, I got caught and I got in trouble at school, but it was okay.
Oh shoot.
Yeah, it was all right. They put an end to that. So.
Yeah, good while it lasted.
Yeah, it was good money while it lasted, but every good things come to an end, so let's see. What are your top five movies?
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, honestly, I really like Godfather and Goodfellas. Like, I love gangster movies.
Ooh, those are like my jam. I love those.
And then I like some quirky things like Swingers and Pulp Fiction and
Oh, of course.
some old classics. I'm a huge John Hughes fan. I love John Cusack. This is like taking me back to my younger years, 16 Candles, Say Anything, that genre, Breakfast Club.
Oh, yeah.
So those are a few.
Awesome. Yeah. Have you watched The Irishman yet?
Oh yes, I
Oh,
did. I mean,
man.
that was like, come on, that was like all the greats like on the screen at once. It was really a joy.
That was an amazing movie. I mean, it had everyone and everything you could ask for, I thought it was so well. I mean, obviously it was a Scorsese, so of course it was good, but I also like, have you seen Donnie Brasco?
Oh yeah, I love Johnny Depp.
Oh yeah. I mean, Al Pacino is my favorite. I love Al Pacino, so. But also, yeah, I mean, what is it? Public Enemies, that one too. That one's so good with Johnny Depp, where he's the mobster.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
So good, yeah. So yeah, I like that. We have very similar tastes. Goodfellas is like one of my favorite mobster movies of all time.
It's a classic. It's just so good. You can watch it over and over and over again.
I really can, and I feel like I can watch The Irishman over and over, even though it's 3+ hours. I could watch that
I
again
know.
for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
What about I like this one too. So, as a teenager, like a rebellious teen, what music did you listen to?
Oh my gosh, I went through so many stages. There was a summer where I actually followed the Dead around for a little bit.
Oh, sweet.
I was into wearing black for a while and listening to The Cure. I went through a lot of different stages, you know. And then
Yeah.
kind of later high school, more like Dave Matthews Band. You know, I grew up in North Carolina and he was in Virginia at that time. So really all over the map.
So I would have known this ahead of time with if we had talked on the phone, but I didn't know you grew up in North Carolina. I'm from North Carolina.
Oh, I grew up in Winston-Salem.
I grew up in Durham.
Oh my gosh, what a small world. That
That's
is
crazy,
fantastic.
right?
Yeah, I went to medical school at Wake Forest.
Oh wow. Yeah, that's crazy. My mom used to work at what is it? It's Moses Cone now, but I forget what it used to be called, but it was in like it was outside Winston, I believe. And she used to commute there for a bit. And then yeah, I went to NC State for undergrad, so like kind of grew up a different way in Raleigh. So like I call Raleigh my hometown just 'cause I've spent 7 years there. It's like I kind of grew up as a adult there. And I love Raleigh and I love Durham. And I'm actually doing residency in Asheville, so I'm back home now.
Oh, wow. Very cool. I love Asheville. I spent a lot of time there growing up.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I went all over. So grew up in Winston-Salem, went to undergrad at Georgetown in DC, back to Winston-Salem for medical school, and then residency at UCSF in San Francisco, fellowship at Stanford, so California for 7 years, and then have been in Seattle in this practice since 2009.
Wow, yeah, you've been all over for sure.
Yeah, but if you'd ever told me growing up in North Carolina that I would end up in Seattle, I would have told you were crazy. I just could never have imagined it, you know, and I absolutely love it here now, but yeah, it was not on my radar.
That's a
So
far.
you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's a far away place for sure compared to, here. So that's cool. Awesome. That's cool. A crazy small world. Crazy small world. So all the way in Seattle, and we still have that connection. So that's cool.
Absolutely.
Well, we've been talking for a bit, so how about I ask the wrap-up questions and then we'll get you out of here?
Ready.
All right, sweet. So I ask these to everyone. So take your time, answer, fill it out as much as you want, and then we'll go from there. So the first question is, has practicing medicine been what you expected?
Oof, yes and no. I get this incredible opportunity to really help people at a very vulnerable time. It's quite an honor and privilege. And so I did expect that. I didn't expect all the doors that it would open as far as creative writing and speaking engagements and just sort of a little bit more of women's health advocacy. So I didn't see medicine leading towards that, but that's been a really wonderful path.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. Well, I'm glad that it's been even more than you expected. And I can't imagine as far as like doing IVF and everything else you've gotten into, I'm sure you couldn't even have thought about how awesome and fulfilling it would be. So, in your opinion, what are keys to success in medicine?
Oh, humility. Knowing what you know, knowing what you don't know, and leading with compassion and the willingness to always ask for help. I think people really get into harmful and dangerous situations when they lead with pride and they don't ask for help when they need it. And that's for patient care as well as self-care. Like, we need to know when we're burning out and we need to ask for help. We need to know when we don't know how to really read the EKG or the CT scan and ask our colleagues for help.
Yeah, that's funny. You hit home with the reading the EKG one right there. I'm still like every day I sit down on my coffee table, I have an EKG book, and so
Oh.
I'll be the first to admit that I'm getting better. I'm trying, but I definitely need help. So I totally agree. Humility is super vital. So that's cool. And then, you've been practicing and kicking butt in your field for a long time, but what about to those maybe, in residency or fellowship right now, or even medical students? What would be your advice to those coming up?
Don't feel like the decision that you make right now is lifelong. Like, don't be afraid to change your mind. If you choose a residency, but you're in it for a year or two and you realize it's not the right field of medicine for you, do not be afraid to change your mind. Or if you have gone to medical school because you thought you wanted to be a doctor, but you're sort of thinking through the day-to-day patient care and realizing that you actually might be more interested in a business side of it or administrative side, don't be afraid to make that choice.
Cool. Yeah, that's a really good point, 'cause you're gonna keep pushing through all this other stuff that's so hard and so time consuming and so much of a sacrifice, and it's not really your passion, and that'll make it hard. That'll make it, I mean, impossible. But like, med school's hard. I'm assuming residency's gonna be hard and everything else, and if you're not in it to win it, it's horrible, I bet. So it's already hard enough, and not wanting it makes it even worse. So
Yeah, exactly.
absolutely. And so, last question is, if you woke up tomorrow and you were 10 years old again and you had to do everything over to get back to where you are today, would you do it all over again?
Definitely. There's my life where I said no.
Right, of course. We've all
I
been
mean, in
there.
the post call at San Francisco General Hospital after, New Year's Eve shift, there are times where I just like, what am I doing? But right now, and for the majority of days, I look back and say, heck yeah.
Sweet, I like that. In fact, I love that. I love that. And I've yet to get a no, so that's good. I've asked, that's a lot of people so far, and I've gotten zero no's, which is always good to hear. So across multiple
Oh, that's
fields.
good. That is really good.
So yeah, I love it. So, I feel bad. I feel like I've just been grilling you for like an hour. So is there
I love
anything
it.
is there anything you wanted to share or ask me?
No, I think I really enjoyed talking to you. I think you asked really insightful questions. I enjoy taking the time to kind of reflect a little bit on the choices that I've made. And I truly do hope that even if just one person out there hears something that we've talked about today that gives them a little bit of hope or a little bit of direction, then this time is well spent.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Totally agree. So, and then they'll learn something and they'll also hopefully have a good time listening. So that's the goal.
Awesome.
So yeah, Dr. Shaheen, I really appreciate your time and just enjoyed talking to you. And you're the first time I've ever just gone cold into a conversation, but it was easy and it was great. So thanks again. I really appreciate it.
Well, I very much appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Well, enjoy the rest of your day and night, and hope you have a great one.
Thank you. You take care. And I really do appreciate the opportunity. This was fun.
Thank you for being a guest. It was a pleasure. So I'll keep in touch and yeah,
All right.
enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you.
All
Bye.
right, bye. That was Dr. Shaheen, OB-GYN and in vitro fertilization specialist. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Hope you learned something. And to those in the game and those on their way up, keep grinding and don't let anyone take your dream away from you.